Today's episode is made possible by Affinity Solutions. Unlock your business's potential with actionable insights into consumer spending, powered by Affinity Solutions. With exclusive insights from over 140 million cards, Affinity Solutions showcases consumer purchase behavior with unprecedented clarity. Seize the opportunity to reshape your strategy with accuracy, execute with precision, and measure with confidence. Affinity Solutions equips you to outperform in today's competitive landscape. Step into the future of analytics with Affinity Solutions today.
What do they know that we don't? I don't know. I just think, you know, they believe in his vision. And clearly from, you know, what took place, you could see that Microsoft's future is really tied very deeply entrenched in whatever OpenAI is working on next.
Hey gang, it's Monday, December 4th. Gajo, Jacob, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast made possible by Affinity Solutions. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two folks, both right for our connectivity and tech briefing. One of them is a senior analyst based in New York, in the city version of New York. It's Gajo Sevilla.
Hi, Marcus. Hi, Jacob. Happy to be back.
Hey, fella. Yes, sir. Happy to have you. We're also joined by that very gentleman that Gajo referenced, Jacob Bourne, who's one of our analysts on that very team. He's based on the other side of the country in California. Jacob, welcome.
Hey, Marcus. Hey, Gajo. Thanks for having me today.
Hello. Today's facts. In 1920, so 100 years ago, Manhattan's population was 35% bigger than it is today. 2.3 million people lived in Manhattan. It's now closer to 1.5. Can you imagine?
Very surprising.
More people?
Yeah.
Yuck.
Higher density, I guess.
Yeah. That is atrocious.
Did they move to New Jersey or something?
Well, Austin. LA maybe? Okay. Yeah. I don't know where they all went, but thank goodness they left. That's a lot. Gajo, you live there. Can you imagine 35% more people?
Oh, well, I live in Queens, but...
Oh, okay.
I can imagine that's excessive.
I'm assuming that the boundaries of Manhattan were exactly the same in 1920 than today.
Yeah.
Yeah, still an island,
making that
right?
comparison.
Yeah, I don't know what people were thinking. That's too many people. That's like Macy's at Christmas, people. That's too many people. Manhattan, though, it has more people living there, 1.5 million today, more people living there than 10 U.S. states. And 10 individual states have in those states.
There's some pretty sparsely populated states.
Yeah,
so
that's where I'm trying to live. Right. It's time to move. Hey. Anyway, today's real topic, what Sam Altman and the OpenAI debacle means for artificial intelligence's future. So in today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover the takeaways from Sam Altman and OpenAI and their situationship. Then, for another news, we'll discuss how AI could disrupt short-form video and what to expect from GPT-5. We start, of course, with the lead. So, Sam Altman, OpenAI, you may have seen a ton of headlines in the last week or two. What the hell just happened? Well, the short history is this. OpenAI, they make ChatGPT, burst onto scene last year. So it's an AI company, obviously it's in the name. So the OpenAI board ousted Sam Altman as chief executive on Friday, November 17th, surprising pretty much everyone. Why? The board said it was because Sam's behavior and lack of transparency in his interactions with the board undermined the board's ability to effectively supervise the company. Mira Murati, the company's chief tech officer, was named interim chief executive. Then investors who don't have a ton of power in this instance wanted Sam Altman back. Emmett Shear, the former chief executive of streaming service Twitch, replaces Murati like a day later. Microsoft, OpenAI's biggest investor, said 2 days after Mr. Altman left the company, left OpenAI, that it would hire him and his co-founder Greg Brockman to run a new research lab at Microsoft. The next day, almost all of OpenAI's nearly 800 employees signed a letter saying they might quit to join Altman's new project at Microsoft unless the startup's board resigned. This is the board that got rid of Sam Altman. And almost 2 days after that, less than a week since all of this started, Sam Altman was reinstated. So all that happened within the span of about 6 days. So why did all this happen? The New York Times reports that Ilya Sutskever, OpenAI's chief scientist, who is also a co-founder and board member, was increasingly worried that OpenAI's technology could be dangerous and that Mr. Altman was not paying enough attention to that risk. So that's what's gone on. Jacob, I'll start with you. What to you was the most interesting part of this whole saga, mini saga?
Yeah, the most interesting thing here is that we don't actually know what happened. I mean, we have a rough sense, but I mean, this is a big deal for them to fire him. I mean, he's kind of the face of generative AI, really, in a lot of ways. And so for them to make this move at such a critical time when there's rising competition, there must have been something, you know, really substantial going on behind the scenes, but we don't know what it is. You know, it was OpenAI's unusual governance structure with the board having a unilateral power due to it having a nonprofit and a for-profit arm that made it possible for him to be fired in such a way. But him not being transparent, well, exactly about what and why did it really warrant termination? So there's a couple of things that might have been going on. One, we know that OpenAI is working on this new powerful model called QStar, which might be an AGI, we don't know. There could have been some secrecy around that model development process. There was also reportedly some tension between Altman and a board member who had authored a research paper that apparently made OpenAI not look so great about the safety research end of things. And Altman didn't like that. So, but we, I mean, it's, you know, it's speculation at this point until there's an independent investigation, which there is as part of the deal of him being reinstated. But I think ultimately what that investigation reveals, that's going to be the most interesting outcome from this.
So you mentioned AGI, just for folks listening, if they don't know what that is. So that's artificial general intelligence. You guys were explaining to me that this is the next kind of version, if you will, the next stage, next evolution of artificial intelligence is when artificial intelligence can basically reason like a human. And so QStar will be one of these products. And there's a lot of concern about getting to that stage this quickly.
Right.
Yeah. The board structure is interesting. Many of its top leaders, so Mr. Altman, he doesn't own shares. And there was an old board. Those folks wanted to get rid of Mr. Altman. Now there's a new board. Three folks so far. There's a chief executive and co-founder of Quora, Adam D'Angelo, Larry Summers, former treasury secretary, and Brett Taylor, former executive at Facebook. And Salesforce, they're planning to add a few more folks as well. An Economist article, though, Gajo, pointing out that personnel changes aren't really enough. The company's structure should also be overhauled, saying in America, thankfully, fortunately, there's a body that has much more claim to represent the common interest. That's called the government. And so just overhauling the board of this very powerful company that seems to be steering the ship of AI isn't enough. Actually, you know, maybe some putting some rules in place might calm everyone's or alleviate everyone's anxieties about where AI is heading and at the speed at which it's heading there. What do you find most interesting about this whole story?
So for me, two things stood out most during the whole debacle. The first is how fragile OpenAI's board structure really is or was.
Yeah.
So it's unthinkable that a company with so much on the line would have such a volatile structure that could be altered by one or two personalities at odds with each other and the company. That's just never happened before. Second, it became evident just how much Microsoft is relying on OpenAI to serve as the foundation for its future. You have to remember when the news broke, Microsoft was just wrapping up its Ignite show where it launched dozens of AI-related products. And so you'd never see a big tech company unilaterally defend a vendor CEO like Satya Nadella did with Sam Altman, and later on offer them jobs and create an entire team. And then later on simply acquiesce once that CEO decides he wants to go back to his old job. I mean, this type of musical chairs never happens. So it just shows that Microsoft is just happy to work with Altman in any way, shape, or form. What do they know that we don't? I don't know. I just think, you know, they believe in his vision. And clearly from, you know, what took place, you could see that Microsoft's future is really tied, very deeply entrenched in whatever OpenAI is working on next.
Yeah. Yeah, they must really believe in his vision. I mean, The Economist was pointing out the one employee reporting that the startup staff, OpenAI staff, were kind of trauma bonded by this upheaval and will likely become even more loyal to Mr. Altman and possibly readier to pursue his commercial vision, which may or may not be a good thing. You want to have folks in the room who are going to tell you, you know, steady on with that. You know, let's think about this a bit more critically. The short history is, so in terms of OpenAI, where they came from, so Altman, Brockman, and Sutskever created OpenAI. OpenAI in 2015 with 9 other folks, including Elon Musk, as a nonprofit, but not wanting it to be driven by commercial incentives for the goal of safely developing AGI, which we just explained is when AI can reason like a person. That's an expensive endeavor. So 3 years later, 2018, after Mr. Musk left, Mr. Altman turned it into a for-profit, as Jacob was saying, to pay for all this expensive processing power. It's controlled by a nonprofit and its board. They raise billions of dollars to develop things like ChatGPT, which everyone knows now. What I thought was interesting from this as well is not just the board structure and how, and you said musical chairs, but it has been a fair amount of movement in its short past as well, because it's kind of a coaching tree effect, if you will. So in basketball, Greg Popovich, one of the best coaches ever, coaches San Antonio Spurs for a long time. He's had a number of assistant coaches who go on to have great success, getting head coaching jobs in the NBA, winning championships, Steve Kerr, the Warriors 3 championships, Mike Budenholzer, the Bucks, Doc Rivers, the Celtics. And similarly, OpenAI, after Musk fell out with the company, he went and founded AI company XAI this year. You've had another group of folks who left OpenAI and went on to start AI company Anthropic, who Amazon and Google have invested billions of dollars in. So it does seem like when people leave this company, they go on to do amazing things. Maybe that was some of the panic here. Like if we lose Altman, who knows what kind of a competitor might be born, even though he was probably going to go with Microsoft. Let's talk about what kind of a shift the industry AI has gone through as a result of this. An Economist article that I shared with you guys suggesting the OpenAI saga marks the start of a new, more grown-up phase of the AI industry. For OpenAI, Mr. Altman's triumphant return may supercharge its ambitions. From Microsoft, which stood by Mr. Altman in his hour of need, the episode may result in greater sway over AI's hottest startup. But the piece was saying for AI companies everywhere, it may herald a broader shift away from academic idealism towards greater commercial pragmatism. And for the technology's users, it may, with luck, usher in more competition and more choice. Jacob, did the AI revolution just go through a shift in your opinion?
Yeah, I would actually say that this is more, what happened at OpenAI is more of a symptom of something deeper that's going on in the generative AI sector than something that isn't of itself a shift. And as far as what happens with OpenAI now, I think that they still, you know, there's still upheaval going on there for sure. And it's not like, okay, Altman is back and everything is right as rain. I think there's going to be some tension going on there. But what's going on in the generative AI sector is that it's becoming very polarized. And I think what happened at OpenAI, again, is a symptom of that. There are some in the tech industry that want generative AI development to advance with no restrictions at all. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there are people who are really worried about AI and want advanced model development to halt completely. And then, of course, there's many people with all kinds of kind of middle ground opinions. But I think that this kind of rift that we're seeing, you know, as AI gets more advanced, I think it's going to deepen. And it makes sense. It's a controversial technology in a lot of ways. There's a lot of things that are unknown about it. And there's little regulation, almost next to no regulation at all. So I think that this is a much deeper problem than what we saw erupt at OpenAI.
Sigal Samuel of Vox thinks the fault line here was OpenAI's dual mission, which you're talking about here. Build AI that's smarter than humanity, while also making sure that AI would be safe and beneficial to humanity. And there's an inherent tension, he says, between these two goals, because advanced AI could harm humans in a number of ways, from entrenching bias to enabling bioterrorism. And it does seem it's a kind of a Sam Altman versus Ilya Sutskever. Sam wants to kind of charge ahead. Even though he has called for rules from the government, it does seem like he's much more likely to move forward. Ilya Sutskever was saying, calm down, this thing's dangerous. We need to make sure we're going about it the right way.
And it's a technical problem too, because this question of how you make it safe and powerful, well, no one really knows how to do that. And that's part of the problem.
Right. Gajo, what do you think about this idea of a shift that's just happened with the AI space?
Yeah. So more than a shift, I think it just brought an awareness that how much stock the industry is putting really on one company and by extension, its CEO. So it begs the question on who's really running things and also the danger of having a charismatic leader call the shots as well as, you know, summarily alter the landscape of the entire industry. I think though for potential OpenAI clients, they might be a bit more cautious. They could be looking for less controversial or more conservative AI partners. As you know, corporate stability counts a lot in business. So, you know, this could be a double-edged sword for them as well.
Yeah, the AI talent angle of this is interesting. The Economist pointing out that the weirdness of all this is a sign of just how quickly the relatively young technology of generative AI has been catapulted to glory. But it holds deeper and more disturbing lessons, it says. One is the sheer power of AI talent. As the employees threaten to quit, the message OpenAI is nothing without its people rang out on social media. And ever since ChatGPT's launch a year ago, the demand for AI brains has been white hot. So I think that's, yeah, no, it's a really good take. Let's end, gents, the lead with talking about what's next for OpenAI with Sam Altman back at its helm. What do you think, Gajo?
So I think they should, of course, continue. They do have, you know, they just released a bunch of new products and capabilities. So that's going to keep them busy. I think at this point, you know, they have a lot on their table, at least until the start of next year, to sort of expand. However, it's worrying that they've had all these outages and, you know, ChatGPT itself has been slower than usual. And so, again, it begs the question, like, what's the balance there? How can they really move forward and show a convincing level of progress at this point?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it's going to be necessarily smooth sailing for Altman or OpenAI as a company with him back. I mean, if anything now, you know, because OpenAI was supposed to be this kind of beacon of generative AI self-regulation for the industry with, again, because of this nonprofit and for-profit arm. But now that this kind of chaos happened over internal disagreements, internal tension, I think there's kind of scrutiny, not just on OpenAI, but on the sector as well. Possibly regulators are looking at this and maybe feeling a lot more uneasy about the technology and regulating it. And you know, and Sam Altman himself was kind of the face of going to Washington and advocating for AI regulation. It might be harder for him to do that now because, again, there's an investigation into his conduct. So I think it's a rocky road ahead for the company. One thing that came out of this is it's now very clear that Altman, for a lot of people in the sector, is kind of a hero, certainly for those nearly 800 workers at OpenAI. And so, I mean, that counts for a lot. That certainly gives him a lot of power in a lot of ways because, I mean, they're still the same governance board, but what can they do?
Yeah.
What can they do now that they know that the workforce is going to go with Altman no matter what?
Right. Yeah. They tried and it failed. So yeah, that's a great point.
So yeah. So I think, again, it goes back to this investigation. What is it going to reveal? Is it going to reveal that maybe the board had something that was justified, or were they clearly in the wrong? And I think that that's going to, you know, if it shows that the board was in the wrong for their decision, then that might mean a whole new governance structure for OpenAI's ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned Sam Altman being the face of AI to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. It seems that OpenAI is kind of the face for AI. It's the company that's at the forefront. So where OpenAI goes, AI goes, the company's synonymous with the industry. Two things that point that out. One, we expect basically 80%, pretty much most of US generative AI users to use ChatGPT this year. So if you're using generative AI, there's a good chance it's going to be ChatGPT. And then in terms of developers, there was a survey by, there aren't our numbers, but there was a survey by Retool found 80%, same number of software developers said they used OpenAI models more often than they used those of rival model makers. That's what we've got time for the first half. Folks, skip the halftime report. Let's crack on with the second half of the show today. In other news, what can we expect from GPT-5 and how AI could disrupt short-form video creation? Story one, Jacob, you just wrote that OpenAI is building GPT-5, its GPT-4 successor. These are the next iterations of ChatGPT. But it needs money, talent, and data to get it finished. You say that OpenAI is looking to raise money with a share sale at a near $90 billion valuation. But what can we expect from a GPT-5 model?
Well, first of all, I just want to say we're not sure that the share sale is on still because of what happened with the internal chaos. But
true.
As far as GPT-5, yeah, we can expect that it's going to be more powerful than GPT-4. It would make no sense for them to release it if it wasn't. As far as what it's going to be able to do, we have absolutely no clue. And a big reason why is because the very people that are building it have no clue what it's going to be capable of. And that's just the nature of generative AI. It's unpredictable. So they go in, they have an approach for how they're going to develop the model. And they, you know, tweak the algorithms and they tweak the data. But until it's built and it's tested, it undergoes rigorous testing, they don't really know what it's going to be capable of. And it's just an unpredictable technology. I think what we can say, though, is that 2024 is going to be a big year in terms of seeing more advanced models hit the market. And it's going to come from different, multiple companies, you know, Google, Meta, Amazon, Anthropic. And so OpenAI has more competition. And so it really needs to, you know, put a lot of resources into making GPT-5 as powerful as it can be. There was rumor at some point that GPT-5 would be an AGI, an artificial general intelligence. I personally don't think we're going to be seeing an AGI emerge next year. I think that's, you know, a few years down the road. We have a few more years to go until we see something like that.
Okay, a few more years before the end of the world. Got it. Story two, Garjo, you recently wrote about how AI could disrupt short-form video creation. You explained that Stability AI, the creator of generative AI image tool Stable Diffusion, is testing a new tool that can take an AI-generated still image and create high-quality videos that last 4 seconds. You say the Stable Video Diffusion model represents a leap in generative AI's capability from prompt-generated images to short animations. But in your opinion, what does this development do to the short-form video space?
Yeah, so basically in a span of 1 year, we've gone from creating cartoony images to more polished short videos. And it really opens the technology to a number of applications. You know, the first to come to mind are advertising, media, design. They would pay good money for this capability as it gets better. However, you know, the tool's training involves publicly available images and videos, which, again, could be a blocker once this gains ground. So right now, it's still being tested, but it does look promising. And, you know, it's the sort of thing a lot of companies will pay good money to be able to access.
Mm-hmm. That's what we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Jacob.
Thanks, Marcus. Thanks, Garjo.
Thank you to Garjo.
Marcus, Jacob, thanks again.
Yes, indeed. Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, and James, Stuart, and Sophie for doing all the other bits and pieces that help keep the podcast going. Thank you to everyone for listening in. We hope to see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Affinity Solutions. I don't know if I said your full name, Jacob Bourne. Welcome.
That's it.
It sounded weird to say both names and then welcome. That's too much. Like if you're famous, I feel like people just, you're both names, you know? You can't just be Ryan, you're Ryan Gosling to everyone. So in this instance, you're both names. Welcome to both names. This is a weird show already.